Well, we want to welcome you back to the Word for Life radio broadcast. I am the host of the show, Pastor Sam Horn, and with me in the studio is my co-host, Dr. Les Olala, who is the Chancellor of Northern Baptist Bible College. Well, we're going to talk about something today that I know you're excited about, and something that I've been doing a lot of thinking about, and I really would like to do a couple of shows on this as we get together. I know you've invested your life in the idea of fulfilling the Great Commission, and I want to talk about a specific aspect of that commission today called discipleship. You know, the world has really come up with a word for that, mentoring. When we think about mentoring, I mean, you go to a bookstore, and I'm sure you've seen books on mentoring, but I think the Bible word for that is discipleship. I don't know what your thoughts on that are.
Yeah, I think that's what Paul was talking to Timothy about. The things you have learned, commit to faithful men who shall teach others also. And obviously the mentoring emphasis is on life-touching life. And I think that's what we will picture today.
And I like that phrase, life-touching life, because I think that's what's missing from a lot of the modern models. You know, it's information-based. There's information-based models. There's the character construction, you know, that's done through preaching and teaching. But when you talk about life-touching life, can you think of a biblical model, or do you have a biblical model you could point us to?
Well, there are a lot of models in the New Testament. Christ himself, we see Paul. What we try to emphasize when we do men's conferences is that every man in our church needs three people in his life. One, he needs a Paul, who is a pattern to him. Then everyone needs a peer that would be like a Barnabas or a pal that he could have. Then each one needs a Timothy or a project. So if we look at each man maybe listening or each woman listening, every one needs three people in the life that's a pattern, a peer, and a project. And the pattern gives us a model. The peer gives us fellowship, and the project takes us away from being self-centered, investing in others. And I think the picture that in my mind that I discovered reading in the Old Testament, the story kind of jumped out at me in 2 Kings chapter 4. And I think we do see a great model there.
Yeah, that's the story of Elisha.
Elisha and the Shunammite woman.
That is really a fascinating story. And that's where you kind of came up with the life-touching life concept.
Yeah, I was actually on my way to speak at an educator conference, and I had my message that I thought I would bring at the general session. And on the plane, I was doing my read through the Bible, and as I got into 2 Kings and I got into chapter 4, I stopped. And I thought, boy, there are some things in there, because the elements that are involved in that are almost parallel elements of what we face in life. There may be a hurting father. There may be a hurting mother. Maybe a child who has gone awry. And maybe there is a burden so heavy that you can hardly even bear that burden in your spirit.
You know, that's an interesting parallel, because, you know, in the passage, the burden was a dead son. But that dead son could be a lot of things.
Right, as we make the parallels without getting too wild on out of context
sure.
application. But I do think the things that were written aforetime were for our learning and admonition. And as I got into this passage, I saw four elements of this drama. Element number one was a dead child. Element number two is a desperate parent. And then we find a defective servant, and then we find a dedicated servant. And the story takes up there in 2 Kings chapter 4 and verse 8. And it fell on the day when Elisha passed the Shunem, where was a great woman, and she constrained him to eat bread. And it was so that as oft as he passed by, he turned in thither to eat bread. And she said to her husband, "Behold, I perceive this as an holy man of God, which passes by us continually." That was quite a perception on the part of that lady. She said nothing of Gehazi at that point, the servant.
That's an interesting character in this whole story, isn't it?
Yes. Gehazi is, we'll talk about Gehazi in just a little bit. But she said, "I perceive this as a holy man of God." And I think one question we need to ask ourselves, what impression do we leave on people? I heard an interesting testimony from a teenager in our youth group years ago. She said, "You know, if I have spent much time with a person and that person doesn't have a greater love for God or a greater desire to know the Word, I have failed that person." I thought that was quite a statement from a 17-year-old girl who ended up on the mission field. But she had that kind of a sensitivity. And this Shunammite and her husband had come to know Elisha, and he was an itinerant preacher who would go through, and that's where the prophet chamber idea came from. They built a chamber. There was a bed, a stool, a candlestick in that chamber for this traveling preacher as he would come through.
You know, that to me, you think about the number of opportunities we have to host godly men like Elijah. That must have been such a privilege for this family.
It was a great privilege for them. I don't even know if they realized it until later, what they really had in that one-on-one touch with Elisha. Mm. But she does observe about him that he is a holy man of God. And it's interesting because later in the story, when a problem comes into her life, to whom did she turn? She went instantly to seek help from the one in whom she believed God was at work.
And it's interesting that she was willing to go a great distance to get there. She literally rode all day long to get to where he was, almost 20 miles distant.
And that's a lesson for us. What kind of an impression are we leaving on people when they really need help? Many of us have unsaved neighbors, and they really don't understand our going to church on Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. They don't understand all of that. But they do understand this. They respect you because you're consistent, and you manifest a godly character. Well, it may not be till 5 years from now when a problem comes in their life. They know they can trust you because they believe you really love and they believe you really care.
And every one of our listeners can do that today.
Oh, everyone. We have neighbors. We have people at work. A lot of times you're going to work right now and you as a Christian don't fit in. But yet you're respected. You're the one with the Bible. You're the one who has the testimony. You're the one who doesn't drink. You're the one who has his family still together.
I can remember growing up, my family, we had a lot of relatives that didn't really know the Lord, or they were just what I call casual Christians. And at Easter and at Thanksgiving, we would get together around the table to have the big meal, and they would always point to my dad. It was always awkward. So, well, now, why don't we let the preacher here, and my dad was a businessman, he wasn't a preacher, but they'd always say, why don't we let the preacher say the blessing? But you know what? It's interesting. Whenever their kids got in trouble, whenever there was a crisis, they would call my dad.
Yeah, he was the one who was evidence that God was at work in the life. Mm. The home was without child. God promised the Shunammite and her husband that they would have a child. And God gave the child. And there was tremendous joy, and we find in verse 18 of 2 Kings 4, and when the child was grown, it fell on a day that it went out to his father, to the reaper. So dad was working out in the field.
Mm-hmm.
This boy by now probably getting into, I would assume, early adolescence, maybe a little older than that. And he said unto his father, my head, my head. And he said to a lad, carry him to his mother. So he took one of the servants and said, carry this boy back to his mother because he's sick. Well, verse 20, and when she had taken him and brought him to his mother, he sat her on her knees till noon and died. So now we see element number one, we see a dead child. This child that was promised and was such a blessing now is dead. We see the second thing here is a desperate parent.
Hmm.
What did she do? She went to the prophet chamber, laid the child down on the bed of the man of God, and shut the door and went out. And she called to her husband and said, send me, I pray thee, one of the young men and one of the asses, that I may run to the man of God and come again. See, she was going to the man of God. And he said, wherefore wilt thou go to him today? It is neither new moon nor Sabbath. And she said, it shall be well. She saddled the ass and said to her servant, drive and go forward, slack not thy riding for me, except I bid thee. She went and came unto the man of God to Mount Carmel. And it came to pass when the man of God saw her afar off that he said to Gehazi, his servant, behold, yonder is that Shunammite.
What you see here in the text, and I know you're going to get here in a little bit, but you mentioned Gehazi earlier. There's a servant.
Yes.
Then there's this lady servant, and then there's God's servant.
Yes.
So the servant is obviously key in this passage.
Yes.
I would think.
Yes, very key. And to find out what is an effective servant. And we find out Gehazi was not an effective servant.
Right.
And we'll discover the reason.
Let me ask before you go on, because I want to get this in on this show, and I know we're going to talk about this passage again in a future show. But let's go back to this desperate parent, because I think we may be talking to some people today who are desperate parents.
To me, in this generation, even though you're Christian, you have a godly heritage, you have a godly home, very few families escape heartbreak. There is something. It may not be an immediate child. It may not be an immediate family. But there is someone within the family that we can know that's carrying a tremendous load. And it's very discouraging as your children age. especially if we put it in the context of a child, that there's a desperate parent because the child, we don't see spiritual life in the child.
Mm-hmm.
And we panic and we say, if I just see a spark of spiritual life, if I could just see something that indicates to me that that child knows God. And it's a heaviness in the heart of the parent because they say, I don't see that. It's not an evidence.
And they've taken the child to church. They've taken their son or their daughter to church. They've been faithful. They've gone to Sunday school. Some of our parents, some of the people that might be hearing this show, or even might be people that have put their son or their daughter sacrificially in a Christian school kind of environment.
You see, because there is such a desire for that child to be alive, to grow, and to be godly. And we begin seeing hints and symptoms that perhaps something is not right. And when we sense that there is spiritual death, it does become a panic. In fact, I told this story to our camp staff. In preparing them, I said, very shortly, buses will be unloading kids, and some of them are dead kids, sent by desperate parents who are at this moment on their knees at home praying for God to do a work in them. And I said, so we are either going to be effective servants or defective servants in their lives, depending on what is going on in the heart. But we do know that there are parents out there with a heavy heart.
We meet them all the time. You meet them at couples conferences and at camps where you speak. I meet them as a pastor, and when I speak, there's nothing that probably is more difficult for people like you and me in counseling scenarios and try to help a parent work through the broken heart of watching a son or a daughter make choices that he wished were different.
Right. And that is a load that needs to be shared. That's why church is a place where people can hurt out loud. And the church family needs to surround people in that kind of a situation.
Well, what's neat is the Bible has a story that's designed to help us. Like you said a moment ago, this is for our admonition. We're so thankful for what you do to support this program. We hope the program is a blessing to you. We have this month an offering that we want to make you aware of. Dr. Olala has a book that describes his life story written by one of the staff members here at the college where he and I teach, entitled A Man Among Them, The Les Olala Story. And we would love to make this book available to you. I know it'll be a great encouragement to your heart. If you'll write us and let us know that you would like a copy of the book, we'll be glad to send you one. Obviously, we do depend on your gifts and your prayers to be able to stay on the air. We will certainly include the book if you send a donation of $10 or more. And we'd love for you to do that. The address to send your letter or just to let us know how we can pray for you, it will be given at the end of the broadcast. Doc, maybe you could take us out with just a few thoughts that would encourage a mom or a dad who might have a hurting or be in a scenario like this widow woman was in.
Well, you know, God has an answer, and God has people to help. To be in God's house where God's people are, have a prayer partner, have someone who can help carry that load, but have someone to whom you can turn and say, please, would you pray with me? Would you pour your life into this situation right now that we might see God work?